Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 44. Go home and be a family man. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 44, recorded on February the 16th, 2016, brought to you by the Happy Hour Network and RayRay.net. I am your sexy party host, Ray Moraldi, a.k.a. Ray Ray. You guys know I'm an NBA online writer for the NoLookPass.com, so you're going to get a lot of NBA talk in this podcast. But really, this podcast is just about anything and everything that I want, what I'm interested in, what's hot in the streets, what's cold in the streets. So a lot of video games, wrestling, other sports, just life in general, because Ray Ray likes to keep it fundamental, and Ray Ray is fundamental. Also, we have two regular segments in this podcast. One involves kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ, where we talk about nostalgic stuff from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s with my friend EJ Christian for the Earnestly Speaking podcast. And we have Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad, where I get a female perspective of whatever topic that we are talking about. But only for this episode, we're only going to have the kicking it with old school with Ray Ray and EJ. The Gal Pal Squad will be back on the next episode. In this episode, I have Sharif Jackson joining me and Adam Jacoby as we talk Street Fighter 2. Yes, possibly one of the greatest video games of all time, and definitely the game that set fighting video games in motion. So before we get to that, we're going to get old school because we just had the All-Star Weekend last weekend. We're going to talk about the Slam Dunk Contest. And yeah, we're going to get jiggy with the Slam Dunk Contest right about now. God, I sound like a wannabe. Scratch!
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ, man, how's it going?
Oh, man, what's up, buddy?
Alright, so, All-Star Weekend just happened, and this little old school segment is going to be a little different. We all saw that extraordinary slam dunk contest last Saturday between Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon. So, I want to know which slam dunk contest got you into it, and which one's your favorite?
I'll be honest with you, the one that got me into, and full disclosure, I'm not as much into it now as I used to be. I do watch it when it's on every year. Obviously, you know, also for regular, but the one contest that got my attention as a kid was the one that D. Brown won in 1991. That was the one.
1991.
Yeah, D. Brown, baby. Remember D. Brown?
Yes.
The Celtics on guard.
Yes. Yes.
The,
yes.
The look. Yeah. The dab.
Mm-hmm.
The dab.
Mm-hmm.
Dab.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yes. Was, yes.
Yeah, that was the one that got me first. And then Kabbalah outdid him a year later with the blindfold one after. My favorite one, though, is probably the one that, and this is where I prove to people that I am a diehard Heat fan, Miami Heat fan. But the two that Carol Miner won. Because you have to remember, as a Heat fan back in those days, like, we didn't get our first All-Star selection until a lot of the morning out there. Like, Glenn Rice was great, but he never made the All-Star team because it was either Pippen or somebody else. So he never got in. So our victories were, you know, if our guys win the three-point contest, if Rice won the three-point contest, or Harold Miner won a standard competition, that's about it. So I used to appreciate the whole things back then, and Harold Miner winning two of them, actually. There was one in 93 and one in 95, I believe. Or something like that.
Yes.
2 years, yeah. As a member of Miami Heat, or the ones my favorite, one of the most, my four.
Yeah, I was still in the Philippines until 89, but I did watch the 88 dunk contest. My brother was more into it than I was. But, yeah, the one I remember the most is 91, because that was the first dunk contest I watched here in America when I returned. So that's definitely memorable for me. 92, I always thought that Sabalos' blindfold was fakish, I guess. You know, I never told him that yet. I'll tell him someday, but I just never bought it. you know?
You thought he was overrated? You thought maybe you can see through the blindfold?
I thought he could, but I never asked him directly, and obviously he's probably going to deny it anyway.
I mean, Ray, don't feel bad about that. I mean, I thought the same thing, too. And after this day, I'm with you. Let me join you on that one day. I'll tell him, hey, Cedric, what's up? By the way, I think that a little bit
yeah.
over there, or you can see through that thing. Sorry.
Yeah, fun fact about Cedric Ceballos, and it's kind of deviating just a little bit, but Ceballos actually, we had like our assemblies in high school, right? And somehow the ASB managed to get in contact with the Lakers about visiting our high school, and it turned out to be Cedric Ceballos that visited us in 1996, right? And at the time, he was hurt at the time, so and he was talking about like how he's going to, you know, return back, the Lakers are going to be better than ever, whatever. And he performed like, you know, his tracks from like the Beatles Best Kept Secret or whatever, right? So
uh-huh.
he did that. A week later he got traded to the Phoenix Suns for Robert Horry, so
he went back to Phoenix, right.
Yeah, he did, yeah. So I actually reminded Cedric about that on Twitter. It's like, hey, remember when you visited Belfort High School? It's like, yeah, he remembers it very fondly, he says. So, yeah. Yeah, Harold Miner, I really love Harold Miner's dunk contest. I just thought the dunk contest became really bad around 94 because they changed it into a timer thing instead of just having, you know, one dunk at a time for each contestant. And that's what got really wacky, I thought. So,
That's understandable. I watched a couple of years in, got bored around 96, 97.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vince Carter, you know, kind of sort of became a lover.
Vince Carter revived it, basically, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, I was done.
Yeah, I think the good ones, I thought, 2003 with Richardson against Desmond Mason, that was a good one. 06, mm-hmm. I thought was a bit overrated because that Iguodala against Nate Robinson had a good duel, but it took Nate Robinson like 18 tries or whatever to get a dunk in. And what I liked about last Saturday is that it basically took him like one try to get it right. And it was awesome. So I thought that was like the best dunk contest since like 2003. And it's probably a top three dunk contest ever. But I'll say my favorite one was probably, I'll say 91. Because that's just like memorable to me.
Where are those this year's ranked for you then? I mean, did you enjoy this year's?
I love this year's. I really loved it this year.
Okay.
2000, because let's face it, like, it was McGrady and Francis were really, really, really good, but it just felt academic, right? Like,
uh-huh.
it was just Vince Carter's show. It just felt more of a one-man show than anything, you know? And 2016 had that, again, awesome battle between Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, and they went to overtime. You know, so I really enjoyed that. Can you top this sort of thing? You know what I mean? So,
right.
But my will always be horrible to me.
My only fear, because Vince Carter was a really good player through his career, and I don't want him to be known solely as the guy that made the big great dunks. I mean, he had a really good career, you know, all the way through, you know, New Jersey and, you know, Orlando, a couple of good years there. And, you know, even Dallas recently. I mean, Toronto, obviously. I mean, I don't want him to get lost in the shuffle. But unfortunately, I feel like he's known as the guy who could dunk. And, you know, he's had a good career. I feel like people know more for the seven contest, which is not a bad thing. But you know, outside of Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, what other superstars do you remember for actually being known for? You know, more about the talent in the seven contest. Most of the guys who have done great in the contest have been marginal guys, like a Dee Brown or a Sabalo, so, you know, those guys, Harold Miner, for example, you know what I mean? So that's my only fear I think I have with that, you know?
Yeah, it's why stars refuse to do the dunk contest, because they don't want to be pigeonholed to be, like, just a dunker. So,
yeah.
But I do think the greatest three contests are 88-2016, but my favorite is 91, just because, you know, all these memories. Does that make sense to you?
I think you look at the totality of it all. I mean, 88, he had a cultural meeting. Because number one, not only you have Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins going at it. I mean, the names. It was the evolution of the game too. I mean, look at the culture of the game. It was It was definitely a turning point for the NBA too, not just with the contest, but also with the personalities too, you know? And it was another evolution in the sport becoming bigger, you know? So,
Right. Yeah. Favorite dunk in a dunk contest that nobody do you think it's talking about? Like, what do you think is the most underrated dunk in a dunk contest?
Ever?
Well, at least in your opinion. Like, what do you think?
Man, every dunk ever. I love the ones they do, like, with the, you know, when they go in the air and they bring the ball down and back up again with two hands. Like, back, but reverse.
Kind of like a pump dunk, basically? Like
sort
pump,
of, when they go in the air, they bring the ball down to the legs and then they're back up again while in midair.
Oh!
And they dunk from behind. And, but they do in reverse, though. They go from behind. I love those. To me, those, I mean, it looks so
easy. I think Dominique has done that, right?
First off, Dominique's the Dean Jordan 86. Was it 86 or 88 they played first time? 86, right? No, it was
88. It was 88, yeah.
Well, no, they met twice, though, back-to-back years, right?
They went against 85. 85 is the one they first did that, and then...
Jordan did the one from the 51 88, right? That was 88 on campus, right?
Yeah, that was 88, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I go ahead and say on the record right now that Dominique should have won that one?
Mm-hmm. That's
Jordan
okay.
Won that contest because Jordan won that contest for two reasons. Number one, because he's Michael Jordan, and two, because Michael Jordan, and three, because... You know,
It was a Chicago.
Five reasons there. It was Chicago, and also the type of dunk he did. I mean, one dunk defined that whole thing.
It's funny. Look, watching back that dunk contest, it's like, well, they did the same dunks over. Like, Jordan did a free throw line dunk twice in that contest. Dominique went to the window well. So. You know,
I thought Dominique was way more creative that year. I watched the 88 contest so many times, and I thought Dominique was way more creative than Jordan. I'm sorry, and all these Jordan whispers go kiss my ass. You know, listen.
Are you also going to complain about about Saturday's dunk contest where you thought Aaron Gordon might have won?
Well, I didn't see the entire contest. I saw parts of it. I had other things to work on. You should watch it. My favorite contest has always been the 3-point contest. I mean, I'm a shooter, so I mean, I've always
I'm a shooter too. But I mean,
3-point contest is my favorite because, like, to me, are you what?
I'm a shooter too, but I appreciate the dunks. You know,
I can do them too. But to me, like. The event that always stands out to me the most every year is people about this. Like, the Bird one, winning three in a row. What else is fucking guy doing? I'm driving. I'm sorry, I'm driving the car. the one that Bird won, well, the three that Bird won, actually, but the one he got, I think, 18 in a row, whatever the hell it was, the number, with a jacket on, I mean...
Craig Hodges went
19... Everybody.
Craig Hodges went 19 straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Rice had a couple of good ones, yep.
Mm-hmm. But, we'll talk 3 points some other time, but let's stick with the dunk contest. It's cool. I do really think that Dominique Wilkins in 88 with that, where he went really high above the... high up and caught it with, like, two hands and then, like, stretched out for that right-handed dunk. If you know what I'm talking about.
I remember it again, but yeah.
That dunk doesn't get talked about enough, about how high he went, and he stretched out, like his right arm is basically like straight stretched out, and dunked it with so much power.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, right? Like, I think Dominique overperformed Jordan. I know we give Jordan credit for the free throws. I mean, that was cool all the time, but I mean, in the totality, though, know, I thought Dominique was better. I'm sorry.
I'm sure you're not alone in that. I mean, I personally don't care. I wanted to see a show. You know, I mean, now I do. You know, like Gordon and Levine and last Saturday night. It's like I didn't care who won. I just wanted to see the show. You know, because you know it's a judge contest. You know what I mean? So. You know,
right.
People are going to think that one duck is better than the other or whatever. So, but yeah, that's what I
You know what narrative I really hate though, too, especially is that people think the country is boring because there's no name on there. I'm like, you know what? That's your fault because you can't expect superstars to be doing that. I mean, it's very rare to see actual superstars actually in that contest. Like
mm-hmm.
when Jordan did it, it was a rare thing. I mean, he did like what, two or three times. That was it. You know, in the 90s, how many superstars he actually had doing that contest? But yeah, Kobe did 1 year, you know, but most of the guys that were in that contest were like were marginal guys. So I can't stand people start saying that, I can't watch them more because it's boring because I don't know these guys. Well, get to know them then. Watch basketball normally, you know? I hate that narrative.
Yeah.
I can't stand it.
Like familiarity and stuff or whatever, but I thought that Levine and Gordon made themselves stars on Saturday night because, like, really, it's the best dunk contest in probably since 2003, or they can argue since 2000 even. So, and I cannot.
I would say based on the highlights, 2000 definitely. I would have said, I mean, that's in 10 years definitely.
Mhm. Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I do think that the dunk contest is kind of an aberration for this year because, like, what if they don't enter next year? So, because I already know what to expect from those guys, and they're really, really, really good. And I hope they return next year. But, So to recap, 91 is my favorite dunk contest because it's just more memorable to me, the first dunk contest I watched in America.
But I do
think the three greatest in general, like in quality, is 88, 2000, and 2016. So, yeah, and you have your Harold Miner dunk contest, which are great by themselves. And
I think 95 was one of the first one he did. 95 was the best one, I think.
Yeah, he's just such a good dunker, such a good power dunker. And I think 95 dunk contest was like kind of like
all he did.
Yeah, that's his last marquee appearance in the NBA, really, so, you know.
Yeah.
And he's a Southern California guy, he went to USC, so, you know.
He's a great guy, though. He's a really good guy, though. Really good guy.
But, yeah, so, D. Brown. Dabby before
D. Brown.
Yep, so.
Dabby before Dabby, yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, before we end this, I want to give a shout-out to Sean Kemp, who lost all four dunk contests that he appeared in, so.
Wow, I know
he
did one or two. I didn't think he did four. Wow, okay.
He did four. He lost them all.
he was a better in-game dunker anyway. Like I couldn't see him being creative. Like he was one of those guys that when he dunked the basketball, he can like change the mood of the crowd very quickly. You know, he was one of those guys that it was more about power for him. It was like LeBron in a sense. Like he was a power dunker. Like he wasn't really actually creative. He just one of those guys that got to the basket at will. And made, you know, got a very strong, but it's just a creativity. Yeah, I don't think it was as creative dunker as we all think he really was. I think how Miner knows that's a lot more creative than he was. As an individual dunker. His illustrated more so spoke to that as an in-game dunker, more than else.
I thought he was plenty creative. He just entered the wrong years. Like, if he entered, like, 96, 97, he would have won. Or something. I don't know, but.
Not even saying that. I remember going and watching his old dunk contest now with Sean Kemp and him. I remember 1 year he was in it. To be honest with you.
Well,
I don't think he qualified for the finals in any of these ones either, too.
He went to the finals in 91 against D. Brown.
And that was the one, right? That was the only one in the finals were?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He was really good at that dunk contest, too. I don't know.
I gotta watch it again, man.
Yeah,
right.
You gotta watch it, man.
The dad always wins, Ray.
Well, what can you do? I guess the dab is forever. 1991 to 2016. Thanks,
yeah.
DJ.
You got it, buddy.
This is Greg Esposito.
Ben York.
From Suns.com, and you're listening to the Ray Ray Is
Fundamental Podcast.
Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 44. We're going to talk a little something-something here with, first of all, Adam Jacoby, my normal co-host. What's up?
How you doing? I'm shredding some chicken for tacos, personally. That's what's up over here. Yeah.
That sounds awesome, because I was just telling our guest here, it's like, dude, Adam's working in the kitchen. He might be a little while, and I don't know whether you're going to be eating or cleaning, and, well, here you are making tacos.
Cooking and cleaning. Because you got to keep a good lab, a nice clean lab, you know.
Right. And our guest, my favorite gamer who loves to spread diversity on gaming. Gaming looks good, everybody. Sharif Jackson, what's up?
What's up, man? I'm doing good, but now I'm really hungry for tacos. That's the problem. That is the problem.
Me too. And we have to spend an hour talking about one of our favorite games of all time before we can eat some tacos or whatever else you're going to be hungry for. But Street Fighter 2, everybody. I mean, that's a historic game. I know Street Fighter 5 just recently came out, but it was really Street Fighter 2 that set the tone for not just fighting games, but two-player games in general. Mm-hmm. What was your first impression when you first saw it, Adam?
Let's see. The first time I saw it was in the arcades. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this? Because the line at Farley's Family Fun Center, which is the arcade in Des Moines way back when, rest in peace, Farley's. I mean, like, there'd be a line like 10 to 12 kids deep, and in an arcade in the middle of Iowa, like, that's a big deal. Because, like, uh-huh. 75% of the machines, you know, you could just stroll right up. And, you know, there had been, you know, fighting games in the past, but there was nothing like that, and nothing that had that you know, quick action, and nothing really seemed like, well, you know, why is this in the game, or, you know, this looks terrible. The graphics were incredible, and for, you know, the early 90s, like, super lifelike.
Yeah.
And so it was just captivating from the word go. But the first time I saw it, I didn't have a video game machine at home, like, at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to start going to the arcade. And I must have spent, I can't even, probably not $100, but getting there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, a ton of money on that game.
I definitely spent $100 on that game, maybe more. Sharif, what was your impression?
I mean, it kind of landed at the perfect time for me, because it came out in 1991. I was 11 years old. I was in the arcade a lot at the Plaza Game Room in New Jersey. And I was already there, you know, just about every week. I was really big on sort of on the pinball games and on, like, the Double Dragons and Final Fights of the day. But Street Fighter II was the first game I remember that people would, like, crowd around to watch other people play.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't something that never existed, like, before then, but I don't remember the legions of people, just, like, other machines would just be empty. And like, I remember just, like, you know, just watching other people play and just being like, I have no idea if I'm going to be good at this. Because it seemed like as soon as it came out, and, like, remember, this is, you know, obviously this is before any kind of internet and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how people learn how to play this game so fast. Because, like, when I noticed it, people were already, like, just kicking butt in this game.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how to do a fireball, and finally, like, reading through these game magazines, like, oh, that's how you do it, or whatever, but it still took me a while. But with Street Fighter 2, the reason why I was excited, because I liked the first Street Fighter, and I don't think anyone knew about the first Street Fighter.
I didn't.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, it's a second Street Fighter, that's awesome. And they look so much, you know, graphically, they look so much better. And then I was so intimidated, because it's like, oh my god, there are 8 characters in this game. Like, back then you could only pick from, like, 1, 2, or 3 characters, and there's 8 of them. And, you know, I saw Ryu and Ken familiar to me, but then I had no idea who Blanco and E. Honda and Chun-Li were, right? Mm-hmm. And I first gravitated towards Chun-Li because she did the backwards spinning cyclone kick, and I was like, that was the coolest thing ever, so I started picking her first. But, yeah, Chun-Li was my first character that I chose. What were your first characters?
Mine, you know, I definitely went to I think the first character that I used was Blanca. Just cause, like, he looked pretty cool, and he had this really good, low fierce punch.
Oh my god. That big fist.
Yeah, he had that big fist that, like, especially in the original version of Street Fighter 2, like, before it was kind of properly balanced, that punch canceled out almost any jumping attack.
Right.
So, like, I just would abuse that thing. Like, I would just kind of spam it, and I would spam the electricity as well. So I just thought that, like, he was, like, cool-looking. I loved, like, his stage in Brazil, kind of like that huge mm-hmm. snake on that tree and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, like, I really gravitated to him first.
For me, the very first guy I went after was Dalsim. Because I was like, his legs, you know, I was like, this guy's got unlimited range. Nobody's going to get near me. Right? All I got to do is, like, spam the kick button. And, like, okay, then I guess I'm just going to, you know, win. Turns out, doesn't really work that way. But, like, my first impression was, well, okay, they've clearly made a huge mistake here in an unbeatable character.
Dalsim was pretty awesome in the first incarnation of Street Fighter 2.
Mm-hmm.
The thing was, like, I didn't know that this was cheating / cheap, but Chun-Li had a fast throw.
Yeah.
So I would punch, then throw, and I had no idea it was cheating or cheap until someone finally let me know, hey, you can't do that anymore. I'm like, why? Because that's cheap, and it's cheating, and you can't.
So good.
Yeah. And apparently I didn't know that you could actually counter that easily by throwing back, but at the time, you know, there weren't that many people that knew about that sort of thing, so.
Yeah, and it's so hard to get your mentality back in that day, because we're looking at it in retrospect when people know, like, the meta of Street Fighter. Back then, it was like, you had no idea how people were able to, like, do a low short and then go up and throw you.
Like, right!
Like, it was just like, what are you doing? How do I defend against this? Like it was, you know, I almost wish I was older when the game came out and like I was more into kind of analyzing how a game works, because it's pretty interesting, you know, just kind of, really trying to figure out, why things were balanced, what like wasn't balanced, and like sort of like all the things that people would expose in that game that you know that they later fixed in the 800 versions of Street Fighter 2 that came out after the original.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the Chun-Li spam, and so I sent a text to my brother earlier today. Just for background, Sharif, I'm a year younger than you are, and my brother is a year younger than I am. So, like, we were coming up at basically the same time, except he and I were even a little less, like, incrementally less wise to all these things than you were. And so I sent him a text. I said, hey, I'm recording a podcast about Street Fighter 2 this afternoon. And he says, talk about how I played like a total a-hole with Chun-Li. It will be discussed extensively, and then he just sends back jump kick, jump throw, jump kick, jump throw, jump.
That's what I did. I thought I was so good in Street Fighter 2 at the time. Yeah, I mean,
and here I am, a Dalsim. I'm like, well, no, stop it. How do you do that?
Yeah.
I have long legs.
Eventually, too, like there was some like we made some rules amongst me and my friends. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. If you throw, you have to throw back, because throwing is cheating.
Yeah.
Like, what? Okay, sure. So,
no.
As Chun-Li, my strongest weapon, the throw, I couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. And that sucked. That made me switch characters.
Now, as a Chun-Li player, were your fingers fast enough to actually do the I forgot what
the
name of it.
The thousand kick?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Cause like I could never do that with the roundhouse button. Like
no.
I could do it with the short or the medium.
I think you only do it with short and the medium. I don't think you do it with the roundhouse.
I tried a lot, and I think that like I would say probably one time out of 20 I could get it going for like second and a half. I'd be like, oh, and then like it would stop, and then I'm just like kicking in the air. And of course, like you know, it would take like long enough to try to get it going that whoever I was playing would be like, well, okay, I'm just going to stay away for now. I'll just let him do this. Oh, he's done. You know?
Yeah, plus as Chun-Li, because I didn't know how to throw a fireball anyway, so I'm like, I'm going to use Chun-Li, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it took me a long time to learn how to do a fireball, and when it happened, it was like, oh my god, it was like my first kiss or something.
Wow.
That's what it felt like.
Now, I hope when you had your first kiss that you told the girl, like, this was like when I threw the first fireball.
That's right. I said, this is my first Hadouken, man.
And she's like, I'm gonna go.
I switched to Blanca my second go around because like my cousin was so good at using Blanca, like with the same reasons you said, like the big fist and the electricity. It took me a while to learn how to do the whole cannonball thing, but man, he was awesome when I used him. So
yeah. Okay, can we talk about like Blanca's a fun person to fun fighter to play as,
mm-hmm.
but against the computer, it was awful. Because like the computer wouldn't like charge up for the cannonballs or whatever they call them. You know what I mean? Like
it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. And so like he would be like walking him toward you, and then all of a sudden, rah! And it's like, no, you were cheating.
I know. Same thing with Guile. When he does the Sonic Boom and the Razor Kick. It's like he doesn't have to charge for any of those.
Right.
He just does it. I'm like, that's not cool.
Yeah, that was highly annoying. Oh my god. I remember getting like super like legit tantrums in the arcade when I would lose a quarter because like guy would literally be standing up, not even ducking, and just do it while I was in the air, and I would get so upset.
Yeah. Now when I play Street Fighter now, which on the rare occasion that I do, I would play Ryu and Kena because I got so good at, you know, kissing everybody. I mean, using a fireball. So, I mean, yeah. But what about the bosses when you first saw them? Balrog, Vega, Sagat, and Bison.
Oh, impossible to beat in the arcade. I never once. I think I might have gotten past Balrog once, but it was such a losing proposition that, like, it made me like not want to even try it. Like
there,
I had to wait until I had it at home.
Yeah, there's just something intimidating about those bosses that they made, you know? I mean, after they made him into regular character, it's not so much anymore, but at the time it's like, oh my god, I'm going against a huge boxer, a masked guy, an 8-foot Muay Thai fighter, and and Bison has psycho powers or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and the bosses were so, like, I mean, they were kind of designed to be cheap for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because I remember, like, when you fought Balrog, you couldn't duck any of his running punches. Like, you had to block all of them, and they all took out health. So he would just get you in the corner and just keep doing them.
Right.
And, like, you couldn't duck under them like you could in the later games. So you're just like, what am I supposed to do with this guy? And I remember even being surprised by the bosses because when I used to watch the game when it first came out, I only saw people playing against each other.
Mm-hmm,
I never saw people playing the game. So when I played it like myself, I thought I won after I beat the seventh person. I was like, oh, shit, I beat the game. And then these other four people come up, and I'm like,
oh, no.
The hell is happening?
I was 13 when the game came out. So, yeah, definitely intimidating. I want to talk about the music, too. Wasn't there, like, something like...
Oh, the music was great!
Yeah. The music, right? Like, it basically fits the country or the background where you're playing at. You know?
Yeah, it's such memorable music. I mean, that's what makes the game, like, I can't think of many games that hit, like, you know, like, visually it looked incredible, the music was incredible, and the controls were incredible, so
mm-hmm.
It kind of hit everything.
Yeah, like, everyone knows now, like, the Guile's theme fits everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, it just fits everywhere. You know, people know that now. It's like... You know, if we ever to have like an American national anthem that needs to be an instrumental, that's all we need right there, right? Just play that one, and then we'll put our hands over our hearts.
I'm just saying, if he happens to throw,
cool.
if, if Bao happens to throw himself in the ring for president of 2016, I might just write him in. I'm just saying.
He will German suplex the other
and you got the Air Force babe in back just like waving at you. Like, maybe she'll be the first lady. You don't know.
Oh, man.
There you go.
Dude, that is what's so good about it is, like, the game was so good that you even, like, remember the random background characters.
Totally.
Yeah, the backgrounds were memorable. Yeah. Like, chickens were getting killed at Chun-Li. You know? Like, we remember those things, mm-hmm. you know? And the Russians getting drunk in Zangief stage.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And also, like, the fence in Vegas stage, people betting on Balrog stage, like,
yeah.
the statue in Saga stage, like, everything. Like, it's so memorable,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. So, and also, the bonus stages.
Oh,
Destroying a car.
You punch out a car with your bare hands, and, like, it totally works.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, see, I wasn't a big fan of the bonus stages. I liked the car one because it was kind of a throwback to Final Fight.
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
like the whole like flaming barrel one and the one where the barrels like drop from the sky, I always found those kind of boring. Like, I was kind of like, I want to punch someone in the face, not punch a barrel in the face.
I kind of liked it. Like, it was a break from punching someone in the face. So, you know, take it out of other items. I like the drum can stage. I don't like the barrels so much, but... the car in the drum can stage, and in the Super Nintendo version, the bricks.
Yeah,
oh,
I never really
right.
cared for the pile of bricks, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I forgot about the pile of bricks. It's just like, let's destroy these bricks. Like,
this is Robert Littow from the world's most dangerous website, Black Sports Online, and I want you to check out Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast. It's the best in the business. It's not none of that BS. It's all about keeping it real and keeping it authentic, so definitely check it out.
Nintendo version, like, because that was, like, probably the most anticipated Super Nintendo game of all time,
mm-hmm.
right?
At
like,
the time, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, and it was crazy, like, oh my god, it looks so almost like the arcade. We were so impressed by it, you know? And it was pretty much the reason why I got a Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it was, I mean, We got a Super Nintendo in 93, and it wasn't the reason we got it was, like, the Super Mario World.
Right.
But then, we didn't have the original Street Fighter II on the Super Nintendo at home, but we definitely got Street Fighter II Turbo when it came
out.
Yeah, and, like, you guys remember, it was $75
yeah.
at Toys R Us.
Yeah.
And that was $1995. Like, that was the year that we got it. Like, it came out in 94, we got it in 95. And so, like, $75 back then is, I did the math on this, $1,000 today. No, it's $109, like, in today's dollars. So, like,
wow.
Like, we complain about, you know, like, freemium games and like, you know, or like PS4 and this and that. But, like, if you had to pay $110 today for a fighting game, you would probably try to hurt the person who asked you for that much money. But you know, that was the thing that happened back then, and it was so cool.
Yeah.
And I would say I played that game, Street Fighter II Turbo, especially with my brother, more than any other video game ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, yeah. I would say, like, for me, it was tie between that and maybe Super Mario Kart with my brother in terms of total hours played in a two-player game. But man, I did have the original version for the Super Nintendo, and it was some obsession. I can admit that, because I remember when Electronic Gaming Monthly first started showing the screenshots. And this is kind of hard to explain, I think, to maybe some of the younger listeners that, you know, didn't grow up with, like, game magazines, but I would just come home from school and just look at the same pages over and over again. I mean, like, the pages aren't going to change. Like, they're not going to update. I can't hit refresh. But I would just come home and just look at the same pages of this magazine.
It really was an obsession. Yeah. It's like, first the arcade and the Super Nintendo, and it's just like they're showing all the moves, and I'm just kind of like,
yeah,
just observing it, like it's like an awesome painting or something, you know?
Well, it was some
hours and hours.
We'd never seen anything like that before. I mean, like maybe some, but it's like going from like cave paintings straight to the Mona Lisa. You're like, what? You know? And especially like, and on top of that, you're like a teenager. Like,
yeah.
Today, it's a little harder to like impress us because, you know, we've been around for, you know, 30 whatever years. Mm-hmm. But back then when like everything's new to you and then something this like drastically changing the paradigm comes along, like your mind is blown in, like I need to consume whatever I possibly can about this. It is life consuming.
Yeah. My cousin had three different strategy guides for Street Fighter.
It's like, I believe it.
It's like, yeah, it's like, you only need one. Nothing's going to be different about the other two.
Wow.
But he has three of them anyway, you know, because it was such an obsession back then.
Yeah, and I remember being worried about how good I would be with the control pad. Because I was so used to obviously playing it with the joystick, and I was like, oh man, like, are they going to come out with a joystick for this? Because I don't know if I can do like a spinning pile driver with the control pad. Like, I was really worried about that, like, before it came out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that game really helped usher in that incredible industry of third-party controllers that were, you know, basically designed to sort of ease your transition from the arcade to the home console. Like, the only one that we had was one of the ones where it was sort of like a touchpad for the directions. Do you remember that? So, like, it was sort of like a circle, so it was, like, super easy to do, you know, like your spinning pile driver and things like that. And, of course, you know, Nintendo was never going to make something like that. But, you know, and basically everybody I knew had, you know, some sort of third-party accessory, you know, one kind or another, and, you know, two-thirds of the people that had them got them because of, you know, either Street Fighter II or if they were, you know, some sort of savage caveman Mortal Kombat, but it was probably Street Fighter II.
My nephew has Street Fighter IV, and he still has, like, specialized controllers for it, you know? He got, like, special pads for it as well as a joystick. So even today, today's gamers, like, Street Fighter is still a thing for hardcore fighting gamers. Let's talk about the moves, actually, for Street Fighter, because I mentioned Chun-Li's backward cyclone kick and then the wind kick and whatnot. Like, what were the... And Shuri mentioned a spinning pile driver. Like, could you believe those moves? Like, oh my god, these moves are just, like, insane!
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, now, I didn't play a lot of the original Street Fighter before Street Fighter 2, because I just thought it sucked, like, it looked terrible. So I never really played it a lot, but I just remember, like, I don't remember ever having games with these kind of motions in them. I mean, like, now they're kind of like, you know, these are the motions for a fighting game. But back then, I was like, what do you mean I have to do a quarter circle and a button? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I was used to, like, just pressing a button and have something happen, right? Like, that's how every other game was.
Maybe do, like, B-A-B.
Right.
Like, maybe it's a combination of buttons, but no, like a half circle. What are you talking about, a half circle? Like, come on.
Right, yeah, and like, you know, I'm not the most, you know, Spoiler alert, I'm not the most coordinated person in the world. So I had to like really kind of train myself to do the timing of that. Mm-hmm. But once I got it, it just felt like butter, you know?
Right.
And of course my favorite, you know, after I moved on from Blanca, because that was kind of short lived once I found out that, if you got hit while doing the cannonball, you lost like double damage in the original game. So I would just, I'd be doing really well and I would try to cannonball and be down half power. And I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
I gotta switch it. I was really a very classic Ryu. And yes, I do call him Ryu.
That's fine.
I know Ryu is the name that I've learned. It's his actual name, but back in the day, it was just Ryu. Yes. Yeah, I was just a very classic fireball dragon punch kind of dude. I'll wait for you to jump and dragon punch. And that was like, that would take out like 80% of the people in my local arcade.
So you were actually good at the dragon punch? Cause like, I would never do it on purpose. maybe it would happen if like I was trying to do a fireball and like messed it up a little bit. But like whenever I would try to do it, I'd be like, nope, guess I'm punching the air.
Dude, it took a lot of time. Like, I mean, like me putting in quarters for the, like, if I was the only one there, like if I was at like my local pizza place or whatever, I would put in two quarters, one for second player, one for first player, and just practice. Like, I'm serious. Like, you know, I would just be up there practicing. And if somebody came through, I was like, hey, I guess you got a free game, you know, to play against me. But, yeah, it took a long time. Like, it definitely wasn't a natural thing. But I got to the point where I could do it a good majority of the time. And because of that, you know, I was, like, one of the better, like, local people because I could, like, reliably do it. And back then, the Dragon Punch was pretty much invincible. It would go through fireballs. It like, basically canceled out any other moves. So if you could do it, especially if, like, you could do it while, like, getting up, like, it was pretty crazy.
I was lucky enough that there was a liquor store across the street that had Street Fighter 2.
A liquor store?
Liquor store, yes. I'm not sure if liquor, like...
So that's why you're always in the liquor store. Okay, buddy.
Well, see, I know liquor stores everywhere else is like a real liquor store. But, like, liquor stores are really convenience stores over here in California. But we just call it liquor store. Anyway, but I was lucky enough to have a Street Fighter 2 machine over there. So every weekend I would, like, spend my lunch. I would save my lunch money and spend it all on a quarter for Street Fighter 2. You know, so I would always be there for like an hour or two just playing it. Of course, someone will come along, and then I'll be Chun-Li and just like, you know, cheat them out. So, but yeah, it was definitely an obsession. And with the Super Nintendo, wherever I go, whether I'm hanging out with friends or cousins in the Bay Area or whatever, we're always playing Street Fighter. Like, it just brought us all together. You know, that was the good thing about Street Fighter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even when I was in college and, you know, from like 98 to like 2002, one of us brought a Super Nintendo in. And like, I mean, like, this is when like the PS2 launched and we were like, yo, let's play some Street Fighter on Super Nintendo because that was gotta go down.
Yeah.
So like, you know, we still, if I visit like my friend in the Bay Area to this day, if I came over, he'll just throw a controller in my hands and say, let's go. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like everybody that I knew, well, you know, everybody in my circle anyway, like we all, when we were growing up, we all had, you know, the Super Nintendo, Street Fighter 2, and everyone, you know, would want to play each other. I have gotten hit in the face over a video game.
Wow.
Was Street Fighter 2. Yeah.
I was
talking mad noise too. Like when it happened, like I was at first a little surprised, but then I was like, I'm not going to escalate this. I got what was coming to me.
Yeah. Me and my cousins were playing and cause I was, much better than all of them basically. And I swept through them like four times. So when I finally got beat, my cousin was just cussing me out. It's like, yeah, F you, I'm better than you. I'm just like, okay, sure. I beat you like five times already. I don't care. It was so competitive, mm-hmm. and it was crazy. And you know, I don't know how long your sessions would be for Street Fighter, but like when me and my cousin would play and practice or whatever, it's like, I don't know, 30, 40 versus games. So that's like about an hour or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that like one of the reasons I got really good is because my older brother was, you know, always better than me in every video game ever. So he would just destroy me, both in the arcade and at home. So when I would go fight another person, it would almost seem easy. Because like he was kind of like a savant, like in most games, he was like the wizard, kind of. he could just pick up a game so easily. So like I always had a, you know, like an easier time with like other folks. But while I never got in a physical fight with someone other than him, because I would definitely throw a tantrum and start fighting him in the house. I never got in a fight at the arcade. I did see several, though. I definitely saw some, like,
oh, yeah. Let's
clear out of here because we don't know what's going to happen. And it usually was people like Adam talking trash. Talking trash. And like, it was usually the people that talked trash, even though they lost. Like, they were still right. Talking trash. And they just might catch a punch in the face.
There were about three fights in the old Timeout arcade. You guys remember that one? Timeout? It was by Sega or whatever.
Yeah.
So there was one in the mall. Mm-hmm. And
it's always in the mall. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So by my count, I think three or four times it was emptied out because of a Street Fighter fight.
Yep.
Yeah,
it was so, super competitive.
Yeah, it really was. Going back to the moves, like Balrog's wind-up punch, Vega climbing defense, Sagat's Tiger Uppercut was the best thing ever.
Oh, man.
And Bison's Psycho Crusher when he's just like in flames and spinning around. Like, those are some of the more intimidating moves in fighting games ever, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I also really liked, Chun-Li, the spinning bird kick.
Yeah.
It was such a creative, like, I was like, who thought of this?
Yeah.
Like, I can kind of see who thought of a hurricane kick, but like a upside down, like, it just was so weird that I would love, I just loved it. Like, it just
the reason why
so
I chose Chun-Li in the first place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it just looks so cool.
Yeah.
You know, the Street Fighter series has sort of taken on, in the intervening, 20, 25 years, you know, it's gotten more and more, like, complex, and the moves have gotten, bigger and grander, and like, to the point where they're, like, cutscenes. But, like, even then, like, now they all, you know, like, the big moves seem, like, pointlessly bloated, whereas, you know, I personally admire the understated elegance, if you will, of the Psycho Crusher or of the
yes,
of the
yeah.
Tiger Uppercut, you know, or even like it wasn't visually stunning or anything like that, but like the Tiger Knee was just impossible. So like I think that was as much a part of it more than like any like visual. I think it was more of a psychological effect that these moves had. Like as soon as it started happening, you're like, okay, I better do something quick or else, you know, there goes like a third of my life bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And like, I think that's like sort of the genius of the game is it becomes more about not what you can do, but what do I think the other person's going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like, if I jump straight up, what's that going to make them do? And then how can I counter it? It was totally a mind game.
Totally.
Yeah, you explained it perfectly because when I play fighting games or Street Fighter, I would always watch what the other guy is doing instead of what I'm doing because I already know what I'm going to do. I'm just watching the other guy do his moves and see where I can punch him in the face or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, it's a total mind game.
Yeah, that being said, I was never good at that part, so that's why I lost about, I would say, 80% of the games I played in it. Like, I was always the mark. I'm sure that I had patterns or whatever But no, it was totally every bit as much a mind game as it was a button mashing reflex game.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's talk about the combo system, because Street Fighter accidentally invented the combo system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, accidentally you know? Is right.
Yeah, accidentally, because back then, it's like, I would get a fireball after, like, a fierce punch. I'm like, what the heck? How did this happen?
Yeah.
You know? And it happened to be, like, some kind of, like, I don't know, programming glitch or something like that, you know? So, you know, the combos that we see now in basically every game possible, which is weird because it's like, okay, why does an RPG have a combo system now or whatever? Mm-hmm. It all started with Street Fighter 2 accidentally.
Yeah, it's like one of the great things about, like, computer programming is that mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say it's a glitch. It's just that if you don't put in a condition that says, don't wait till this move is done before this one starts, then you can exploit it. And, like, who would have thought about that while they were making, like, this game, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like, I don't really blame the programmers in terms of, like, you know, being a glitch or whatever. I just think it's just sort of a beautiful accident, like a, you know, like a lot of, like, you know, things are that, you know, that people invent. So yeah, it was just incredible, and you knew that it was accidental, because, like, one of my favorite combos that I still use now, where if you're Ryu and Ken, and like you do like a jumping attack, and then like a fierce, and then a dragon punch. Fireball. If you did that in the original game, it took out like almost half of the power.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, like, it was ridiculous. So you knew that they didn't plan on that being in there, because it was basically ended the game if you got that off.
Not just Ryu, but like everyone else too. Like freaking Guile had the Razor Kick combo that was just like impossible.
Yeah,
you know. I'm still trying to figure out what my cousin used to do was a flying attack, an uppercut into a razor kick. I'm like, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah. So I have an interesting story about that. So my friend in the Bay Area, the one that I lived with in college, we tried to do that move for literally almost our entire time in college. We would play these Guile versus Guile matches and just try to get it off. And he actually did it once. And he still mentions it to me because I can't do it. I've tried to do it like against dummy opponents, against actual opponents. I cannot do that.
Yeah, I've done it once, and then I was like, oh my god, I know how to do it now, mm-hmm. and I never did it again. So, it's just crazy how these combos came along, and now it's a huge part of video gaming. Heck. Street Fighter 2 is responsible for, like, all these fighting games, basically, you know? It's like, they should get credit for competitive two-player fighting games, because there would be no Mortal Kombat, I think, without Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, I mean, Street Fighter 1 wasn't the paradigm shift that 2 was. Like, you didn't see that and be like, well, okay, this is gonna launch an entire genre. You know what I mean? So, I don't know the timelines and histories of, you know, all these different games, but, I mean, yeah, in terms of, like, creating a culture of, you know, everything that you know, surrounded a great fighting game, I think Street Fighter II was sort of the nexus of all of it, for sure.
Hey, this is Matthew Mercer, voice of Abe, the Trapper from Evolve, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast.
I can't remember many games of my lifetime in the arcade that had that impact. Obviously, I was here after sort of the Pac-Mans and the Space Invaders and that kind of stuff, which I obviously became like phenomenons, probably beyond Street Fighter, because those were like mainstream, like Pac-Man songs and movies and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But in terms of my lifetime, there definitely hasn't been another arcade game that was as memorable. And like, I really think that game was solely responsible for arcades staying alive in the early 90s. I mean, I think they probably would have faded away if it wasn't for Street Fighter. They probably would have faded away a little earlier than they did.
The only game that I think can even come close is NBA Jam.
Yes!
But that's second place. Like, a decided second place on that one. And third place would probably be Mortal Kombat. But again, you know, that's it's sort of a descendant of Street Fighter. And then I'll go with what was the what was the Aerosmith shooting game?
Oh my god!
Oh, that's right.
I think I know what you're talking about.
It wasn't D-Generation X, but it was
Revolution X.
Revolution X. Absolutely. Yeah.
Revolution X. Yeah,
that was a big deal. That was a super big deal. Like you can make that same argument for like Revolution X being responsible for like the Resident Evil series. You know, sort of spawning that. Except Resident Evil was way better than Revolution X.
Yeah.
It was sort of the Led Zeppelin to the Beatles. Sorry. Anyway, but no, I think you're absolutely right that the history of arcades is so much different. Like, I think that they are relics of the 80s.
Yes.
If it's not for Street Fighter 2.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Street Fighter 2, like Sharif mentioned earlier, there was like a million versions of it. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't want to let go because they want to milk it as much as possible.
Which is correct. That's exactly what you should be doing.
Yeah. Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition. So, like, suddenly our people that owned the cabinets decided to make bootleg versions of Street Fighter 2. So they decided, okay, fine, Capcom decided to make Street Fighter 2 Turbo to counter those.
Yeah, and I think that the bootleggers should get some credit because I think they kind of forced Capcom. As you said, they forced them into making these versions because, you know, I had a version at my local, like, bodega where I could play as the bosses already.
Yeah.
And I could do a non-charging Balrog punch that threw three fireballs at the same time. You know? It was like, that's what, you know, like, that's what we would play a lot of. Like, all those air fireballs and stuff, that started in the bootleg version.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Super Nintendo, they would have the game Genie where you could play like the boss as the bosses as well. So, wow, Game Genie.
The Game Genie. That was like my first, even though I didn't know it, that was my first foray into computer programming. Like I was changing around bits in the cartridge.
Right.
Yeah.
When you could play as bosses, I thought that was the coolest thing. I was like, oh my god, like I could play as Vega now or M. Bison. And then you found out you have to charge some moves. I'm like, ah, they seem so slowed down now. Also, like, we can't forget, like, even, like, as we obsessively read through those magazines, it's like, we were also fascinated by the background stories. It's like, oh my god, so this is the reason why Saga has a tiger uppercut. You know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Like, oh, Vega's scar, now it all makes sense.
Yeah. And Blanca was a child, like, that got, you know, that got lost or whatever, and suddenly he turned into a monster or something, you know? Like, we were so obsessed with, like, every detail of Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. And then in the movie, they just, like, changed them all. Oh, no, it's actually Blanca was a soldier, and then he got M. Bisoned into the beast, and...
Dude... Raul Julia, man, was M. Bison.
I miss that, man.
Yeah, it was his final performance, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Van Damme was Guile.
Yeah, a guy who barely speaks English. Let's make him the American hero.
America. I mean, like, a flex, so let's throw him in there.
It was so easy, like, I don't know. It's
what about, okay, because I'm thinking about this, and really there was a dire shortage of American action heroes with blonde flat tops. I think that was a major weakness in the 90s. But I feel like they should have gone with the Boz, little Brian Bosworth act.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah,
he can't act. But that's not what that means.
You have to in the Street Fighter game, though.
So like, no, like, Steven Seagal with, like, a wig on?
Oh, man, that would have been awful and awesome. Like, especially because, like, you know he wouldn't have cut his hair. He'd be like, no, we can just pack my hair in under this. And it would have looked like something was seriously wrong with him.
Oh, man. Now I'm, like, thinking, like, maybe we should make, like, our own, like, fantasy Street Fighter 2 movie or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Like, actors from the 90s or whatever.
I mean, they're rebooting everything, you know? Like,
that's true.
They've revived so many film franchises. I feel like we are overdue for, like, a Street Fighter 2 that, like, that does the video game its proper service. No disrespect to Raul Julia and Jean-Claude and whoever else was in that movie. but I feel like they could make it a whole lot truer to the video game and, like, still go, like, kind of dark with it in ways that they sort of only hinted at in the movie.
Are you sure Hollywood will ever do it justice? Because they're the types that would probably pick, like, Megan Fox's Chun-Li or something.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's a
or Beyonce.
Yeah, it's a big enough property that they definitely would try to mainstream it, and it would definitely be like Garay is saying. It would be, you know, Beyonce as Chun-Li. Maybe Ryan Reynolds as Guile. I don't know.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, I can't decide if that's a good idea or not.
I think it's a great idea.
I'm just saying.
Emma Stone is Cammy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt as Vega.
Pratt would absolutely be part of this.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
the lock of the year.
Yeah, I don't know how dark they could get. I know that they tried a little dark with that Legends of Chun-Li movie.
Which I still need to watch a live tweet, by the way.
Yeah, it's really not that good, man.
It's just awesome. That's why I need to live tweet it.
Yeah,
I've seen a few clips of it on the YouTube, and it's the production values are not superb.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be. You know.
But it doesn't seem aware of that fact.
Yeah, it definitely does not. I feel like the original Street Fighter, they kind of had some fun with it. This one, they were definitely going for, like, a serious take on the universe, and it fell very flat to me.
Yeah, see when you try to be serious, yeah. I mean, come on, you know.
You better have a serious budget for it, and they did not.
Yeah, instead of like, oh, well, I think we have enough for it. Like, what, $2 million? Okay, whatever. You know, so, yeah, so Street Fighter 2, greatest video game of all time. I know there's Mario.
I can't put it.
I know there's Grand Theft
Auto. Yeah, yeah, I can't.
I know there's Mario. I know there's Grand Theft Auto. I know there's Resident Evil. All these other franchises, Mega Man, even
Legend of Zelda, man. Like,
yeah, Legend of Zelda.
But yeah,
it's not in my top five, I would say, but it is. I don't think that undermines the experience of it. I just don't think it can. No, it's nowhere near. I would love to hear the argument for it to be best game ever. I can't see it being in any argument for that. It's a great game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like I feel like once you start comparing video games across, like maybe you can compare them across platforms, or maybe you can compare them across genres. But I don't think you can do both at the same time. Because then otherwise you're like, okay, yeah, well, what's better, a Jeep Cherokee or David Bowie? Like, how do I answer that? I mean,
well,
maybe if you ask me, like, what's better, a 1993 Nissan pickup when they were terrible at them, or David Bowie, I'd be like, yeah, you know what, I feel pretty good about Bowie at this point. But, like, otherwise, it's like, what? I don't know how to answer this. So, like, I can't tell you, I have no idea how to tell you whether Street Fighter 2 is better than Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah,
which is the best of that genre, or of that franchise. But like, I don't, I feel like of the fighting games, it's the greatest of that, and then once you, and I feel like that's as far as you can go in terms of, like, trying to contextualize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was definitely one of the better video game experiences for me.
Totally.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah, like, as you said, it was probably, like, the most played game, in your life, right? Like, I can't think of any other game that I played more than Street Fighter II.
Yeah, I think I for various Bud Light related reasons, I don't think I ever got a proper accounting of how many hours I spent playing NCAA 06 with my roommates, or even Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball. I think, you know, that was way up there. I wasn't drinking beer when that came out, but like I was still playing it as late as 07. So like I'm not certain on it, but in terms of hours I spent playing a game before I was 18 years old, yeah, Street Fighter II Turbo by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably counts for a lot. And I would say that it was one of my favorite video games ever, like, just like full stop, one of my favorite, and everyone's got their own favorite. But I, you know, once again, there's a difference between favorite and best. And so I'm fine with calling it the best fighting game, and I'm fine with calling it, undoubtedly one of my three favorite games ever, and quite possibly my favorite game ever. But, you know, that's, again, that's as far as you can go, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, this is Keith Boss Claus. You see, you're chilling with us on Ray Ray Fundamental Podcast.
You know, like, the games I like tend to be, like, single-player, kind of dive into the world experiences. So it's hard for me to place that above those on my personal list. But I can easily put it near or on the top of favorite two-player head-to-head games. Even favorite two-player games in general, because I think it's better than... I can't think of any cooperative games that are better than it either. So, yeah, I feel comfortable putting it near or at the top of, like, favorite two-player games ever. I would even put it above Mario Kart, which, again, like, my brother and I played that's the only game I can think of that would match the hours of Street Fighter II that we played. And I love that game. But if I had to think about it, you know, Street Fighter, because of the history of it, like, because it's, I mean, like a Mario Kart is still going as well, but I'll give Street Fighter the additional leg up because so many games were inspired by it. Mm-hmm. Mario Kart, I mean, like, there have been other attempts at Mario Kart-style games, but it's really been the only game that has done that. Street Fighter kind of created, you know, all the Mortal Kombats and all the Neo Geo fighting games that came after it, like, all those games. So like, I'll give Street Fighter, like, the heads up off of the, you know, like, this, like the importance to the industry as a whole that it's had.
Before you came on here, Sharif, you were playing Street Fighter V.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's how far it's come now. Like,
I didn't know there was a 4. Seriously. No idea.
Yeah. But it's essentially the same game, but, like, you know, just better graphics and more characters and, you know. But it's definitely not as memorable as Street Fighter II, which was basically, like, the perfect package for a video game.
It was the perfect time. As I said before, like, the perfect combination of graphics, music, and control, all three of which I would argue never existed in a game before. Like, we never had those graphics. Like, I can't think of memorable music, even from games that I liked at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen so many buttons on a game before. I was like, 6 buttons? What is going on here?
Yeah, 6 buttons. The reason why, like, six button controllers were created because of Street Fighter II.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying. Even when the Genesis had their horrible port, they had to come out with an entirely new controller just for people to be able to play it properly instead of, I think if you didn't have that controller, you had to like press select to change the three buttons from punch and kick, if I remember right.
That is so horrible.
Which is just terrible.
Yeah. Oh my god, the Sega Genesis version of Street Fighter 2 was playable, but like the voices had like laryngitis or something. Mm-hmm. It was so bad. Like or whatever. Yeah. It's like I can't understand what they're saying. So yeah, anyway, Street Fighter 2 right up there with Mario, Resident Evil, Grand Theft Auto, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong as a groundbreaking game.
Tetris.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Zelda.
Yep.
Final Fantasy. Definitely all of those. They're all in the same tier.
Yeah, they're absolutely in the same conversation.
Yeah, in video game industry. So yeah, that's it. We're done. I'm gonna be throwing fireballs now on people. So.
In real life? Wow.
I wish.
I didn't know that.
Or maybe those are just kisses. Never mind. Anyway, we're done. Adam, plug your stuff, all that junk.
I am, as ever, at Adam_Jacoby on the Twitter.com. The underscore, always important.
Always.
And you can find my Iowa Hawkeye-related content at BlackHeartGoldPants.com.
Sharif?
Yep, so you can find all my stuff at sharifjackson.com. That's including my science blog, Science Looks Good, my gaming YouTube series, Gaming Looks Good, and my two podcasts, Operation Cubicle and Spawn on Me. So check it out.
Mm-hmm. Find me on Twitter at the No Look Pass. Visit my NBC at thenolookpass.com. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, find it on Stitcher, download it on rayray.net, all that stuff. We're done. Thanks a lot for wasting my time, guys. Oh, yeah. Adam, what do you got to say again?
Oh, there's no need to be bugging when it's a Ninja Turtle you're hugging.
We are out!
Perfect. Game over, yeah! You win.